Welcome to a podcast of The Mike Novak Show. You can listen to Mike live Sunday mornings from 9 to 11 Central on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM.
They are brutal. If you've ever tried to garden under one of those things, there's no way. They suck up all the nutrients, and we're talking Norway maple, suck up all the nutrients. The canopy is so heavy, no rain gets down there, no light, it's tough.
But may I ask you, what's more important, the tree or the little beautiful garden underneath? I gotta ask you the question. I mean, so
my little beautiful garden underneath.
Get over yourself. So, in the bottom line,
he named his show The Mike Novak Show.
Oh, stop it.
Live from the beautiful Showcase Studios on South Pulaski Road, just across the street from the 53A bus stop and in between Paco's Tacos and Zaka Tacos, it's The Mike Novak Show, Chicago's only locally broadcast green, gardening, and environment program. Heard every Sunday right here on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM.
Good planets are hard to find. Temperate zones and tropic climes. True currents and thriving seas, wind blowing through breathing trees, strong ozone and safe sunshine. Well, good planets are hard to find. Good planets are in demand.
This hour of the Mike Novak Show is brought to you by The Care of Trees, our business's people and their love for trees. And by Sid's Greenhouses, Chicagoland's premier garden centers. And by WRD Environmental, creating sustainable landscapes for today and tomorrow. If he's a Renaissance man, I'm a Madonna and child with eggplants. Here he is, Mike Novak.
What's the name of that new movie that Denzel Washington is about the train?
Unstoppable.
Unstoppable, that's what you are. Unstoppable. That's kind of what things look like in here about 2 seconds before we go on air.
Yeah, it's about a runaway train.
Yeah, it's a runaway train.
That's a safe metaphor.
It's like, whoa, where's the computer? How come we're not on Facebook? Whoa, oh, my God.
I hate Twitter sometimes.
I know you do.
It doesn't like to sign in right away for me sometimes.
It because it knows you don't like it.
Mm-hmm. It does.
Twitter is not your friend.
Well, I just tweeted, so take that, Twitter. All right, See, it foxed me again. There, I tweeted.
Did it fox you?
Yeah, but it says 82.5 FM, which is wrong. It's supposed to be 92.5.
You didn't. 82.5, what's that?
A typo is what that is. Hmm. Anyway, moving on.
Okay.
We're live and on the radio, folks. Isn't it fun?
Yeah, not yet.
Right, we're building a better garden gnome and a better tomorrow.
Yeah, but we got to, explain that, you run in here at the last second because William's got a bad foot.
Yeah,
and
the panic button got hit, and I thought I was going to have to wheel him into the ER, and then they called back, and apparently he's fine. And, yeah, my heartbeat is still coming down, I think.
But he's, up all night, and you think maybe he was just scamming you.
Don't know. I think my son loves the drama. He's going to win an Academy Award someday, I think. Or he's going to really try. So I don't know if it was more of I want attention or I want to be, babied or cuddled, or if it was, yes, my foot actually hurts. And that's the problem with this age, because they test you like that. So, because he's almost 4.
And you got tested.
The one who scared me was my mom. She's a nurse. So when the nurse calls and says, I think we need to go to the ER, I believe her. I was like, oh, really? Is it falling off? Is it black and blue? Is he crying? That's what scared me.
I think you need to sit down with mom and say, here's the deal with William.
She knows. It's just that she's the grandma. It's her grandbaby.
Yeah, the grandma's job is to rush to the hospital every time.
Normally she's not that much, but I think it was because he didn't sleep and then he was still complaining about it. So there were several factors that we couldn't tell if it was an act or if it was sincere.
All right, but your heartbeat's back to normal.
It's getting there. We're working our way down. So if Twitter cooperates, I'll be okay.
No, Twitter's not going to cooperate. Twitter doesn't care.
It has no feelings.
Neither does Facebook, to tell you the truth. But if you are listening or you know friends, Zamboni says we love you,
yeah,
Heather.
Yeah, well, see, I love the people on Twitter. It's signing into Twitter. It's Twitter, the component
that angers me. Our Twitter friends are great.
Our Twitter folks are wonderful.
And we have them all over the place. I know that there's a woman in Ohio that listens here, and of course in Illinois. And I tell you what, if you're on the internet listening to the Mike Novak Show today, and you're on Twitter, send us a tweet. Let us know where you are, and we'll try to figure out where else people are listening to the show. You can do the same thing with Facebook, and you can find both of these by going to MikeNovak.net. The links are right on the homepage for Facebook and Twitter, so you can. And we got while you're on the homepage, you have. Did you watch my video? The video I shot at the Jasper Pulaski Fish and Wildlife Area in Northwest Indiana. You haven't seen it yet.
I have not seen it.
Well, you can. Okay, well,
I'm playing it right now.
Can I put it up on the computer?
I think so. Wow. What were you on the savanna of Kenya or something?
Yes, those are sandhill cranes, and if you go to the video, I mean, it's just unbelievable.
Wow.
It looks like the Serengeti, doesn't it?
It does.
And
look at all of them.
And we were watching them. Kathleen and I go down there, and I just had set my camera on video, and then they all took off at once. So I said, I got to get this. And we put the video up on YouTube, and now it's posted on the homepage of MikeNovak.net. And
Very cool, you can hear it now.
I know. It's unbelievable. You got to go. They're still migrating. It's a stop-off point in Northwest Indiana where the cranes go on their way south. And now, you know, this is prime time. And we went out there. It was dawn on Wednesday of this past week. Hundreds of these sandhill cranes. Isn't that amazing?
That's very cool.
So you can watch that video on the homepage. There's pictures that Kathleen took, too. There on the left, you can see some of the sandhill cranes. There's a picture of the cranes and the observation platform that we stood on. And then right below that, a coal power generating station, which is...
Irony, yeah.
You know, you want to know why? Because if you look at that picture and where all the pollution is going, it goes right towards the wildlife area. It just blows off because it's a prevailing winds go right to the wildlife area. And a picture of there was a sunflower field that we stopped at, which was amazing because all the sunflowers had just been allowed to dry and droop. And I took a photo of one. And then at the bottom, a photo of me and Julie Rizzo, who was on the show a few weeks ago with Osage oranges in our hands, mm-hmm. monkey brains.
They do look like monkey brains,
they
don't
do.
They?
Tom Croc is in the studio from the Care Trees. They are monkey brains, aren't they?
They look like monkey brains.
So we've got that picture there. And Tom Croc is here. He's going to start the show. In fact, we got to get Sean King Zed on the line as well, also from the Care Trees. Great sponsors of the Mike Novak Show. If you didn't know they were sponsors, you're not paying attention. It's you're hardly listening at all because they're all over the place. You know, they tell us, I got to say that in full disclosure mm-hmm. now. And always, you know, because I don't want people to think that, that, you know, I'm scamming them. Mm. But, you know, I'll tell you something. One of the reasons they're sponsors of the show is because they know so much and they're such a good company and they support me. So, as people always say on Chicago's Progressive Talk, if they support you, support them.
Right.
And if you got a tree and if you got, and you love your tree and you love your trees, call the Care Trees. A lot of people, and maybe you can address this a little bit, Tom, a lot of people want to do it on their own because they want to save a nickel. And then they lose the tree. And they realize, well, maybe I didn't save any money at all.
Lose a tree or do it wrong themselves.
I mean, yeah.
There's so much to it.
There is. And it's not a matter of folks think. You know, it was something that Sean King Zett, who we're going to have on here in a second, who is also with the Care Trees. Tom, by the way, is you're the oh gosh, and I had it in front of me, and now I don't have it in front of me. Give me your title,
senior designer for Christmas.
I apologize. I had that here, and I was all set to just say, you know, and I'm supposed to know all this stuff in advance and have it all in my head. I don't have anything in my head. There's very little in my head. Senior designer for the Care of Trees, and Sean King is the district manager for the Chicago office. And they're going to start the show. We're going to talk about how to decorate your holiday tree without killing it.
Right.
Or damaging it.
Right.
Or mutilating it. And that'll start the show. And then, of course, Rick DeMaio weather at 9:30 or thereabouts. After 10, Marnie Wilson, garden designer for Mariani Landscape. This is very much a gardening kind of show today. Sometimes they're environmental, sometimes they're gardening. This is a gardening.
I like gardening.
A lot of people do. And folks always ask me, well, if you're a gardening show, what do you talk about in the winter? And...
Just like that, too.
Yeah, just like that. I say, are you kidding me? I never run out of ideas. There's always something to talk about, always something going on. Marnie be here after 10. And then in the good growing segment, Tom Spaulding, who's the executive director of Angelic Organics Learning Center and the director of the Illinois Local Food Farms and Jobs Council, is going to be talking about farming and how, you know, we've talked a couple of weeks ago, we talked about getting new farmers in Illinois and talking about how we don't send all of our food dollars out of state, our $48 billion that we send out of state to pay for food. We'll talk about that a little bit on good growing. All right, so what have we covered? We got that all. We've got, oh, and by the way, if you're listening to the show and gosh darn it, you want to hear it over and over again, you can go to my podcast. At MikeNovak.net, just click on the podcast link. We're on iTunes. You can pick it up there. You can download, Cake, and then download me. Maybe
turkey,
not,
maybe, stuffing recipes and Novak.
Well, I don't know if there's stuffing recipes on iTunes.
No,
might
no.
Be.
Yeah.
I was talking about cake, not...
Oh, the band cake.
See?
You're savvy to the band cake. I'm proud of you, Mr. Novak.
I love cake.
Cool. Well, who doesn't? It's delicious.
Yeah, about 90% of our audience is listening, what's cake? Yeah.
It's like, who's on first? What's on second? And I don't know who's on third.
All right, we got another tweet here. Mm-hmm. Listening from Forest Park, Illinois. All right, that's...
She's my neighbor. I live in Oak Park. Forest Park's right next door.
All right, so anybody else who's listening elsewhere in the country, just tweet us and let us know. So let's go to line one, bring in my buddy Sean King Zed, also from the Care of Trees. How you doing this morning, Sean?
Good morning, Mike. How are you?
Good. I asked you first, but that's okay.
I'm good. Wonderful.
And what?
Care of Trees question on Twitter.
Oh.
See how it's instantaneous. Ask and you
wow.
shall receive.
Yeah, right away. My skinny garden wants to know, Care of Trees doesn't service Forest Park, right? Looked at them after hearing it on your show. I need my peach tree pruned. Do you guys handle Forest Park?
We do. We do take care of Forest Park. I think Art Davis is the arborist that takes care of that neighborhood.
You got a number there that...
Actually, one of our arborists lives in Forest Park.
Oh,
well,
see?
You wouldn't want to shut him out. So do you have a number? Should we just go online and find the number?
Okay.
Actually, they can call any one of our numbers. They can call my office number, which is 312-492-7206, and someone will be able to help them out.
And, of course, the number I always give out is 847-394-4220, and you can
yep.
call that and get any. So, we serve, they serve.
Well, very good.
So, all right, that's all the time I have. Good night, everybody.
Mm-hmm.
all right, I'll talk to you guys later.
Tom, let's start with Tom, because this is the holidays coming up, and this is the week that a lot of folks are going to start decorating their trees outdoors. You know, some people wait to get the indoor tree. Some people get it now. I can't imagine having a tree.
Oh, Home Depot's got them already.
What's that?
Home Depot's already got the indoor
trees. Oh, well,
tree
you know,
out.
And in my neighborhood, all the little corner lots are set up. And they've
yep.
been set up for a week or two. I'm trying to imagine having a real tree indoors for a month, because even if you hydrate it properly, it's not going to continue to suck up water, is it?
No, they don't suck up water once they're first cut. I mean... You got to keep watering them, but they're not going to stay alive for a month. I mean, they're dead. There's no getting
well,
around it. They're dead.
They've been lopped off at the ankles. So yeah, do you agree with that, Sean?
Oh yeah. I mean, you can using the plant alive stuff that you put in the water and freshly cutting the end helps. And then don't ever let it go dry. You know, once you've cut it and once you've cut it and do that, it will keep taking up for a while. But at some point it stops, and then it starts to dry out, and then needles start to fall off.
So, which is why I always wonder why people want to have a tree up for 6 weeks. It seems like it's just a fire hazard.
Yeah, it is.
Not to mention a mess, getting those needles out of your carpet or whatever. You're doing it in, like, June. You're still trying to pick needles out of your carpet. So.
Yeah.
At least I always am. I don't know about anyone else.
No, you're not any different from anybody else, Sean. So I understand that. All right. Well, that's the indoor story. And by the way, the other thing, if you want to hydrate your tree, all those fancy schmancy little formulas, and they talk about putting soda in there, just use water.
Tap.
And freshly cut it. Don't if you got a saw, it's better to do it yourself. And kind of like freshly cut flowers, you know, the faster you get them into the water. After you cut them, the better off you are. It's the same with a Christmas tree. You know, if you don't have a saw, then having them cut it is fine, but you're much better off if you can get it home, cut it yourself, and then get it into the stand as quickly as possible.
We got a couple of tweets here I want to get to, and then I'll ask you another quick question. First of all, Valtrain tweets, we went to Jasper Pulaski this morning because of your recommend. Sandhill crane, so neat. Thanks for letting us know. See? I like that. Cool. And my skinny garden wrote back, said, the Care of Trees, fix your zip code service area thingy on your website. You could be losing business.
Okay. I'll pass that on.
Yeah, why don't you?
To get constructive criticism.
See, I'm not the only one.
Well, the tweeters know.
What's that?
The tweeters know websites. You know, they're website savvy. So if
you
they
know,
can't if they can't manipulate something on a website, something's wrong. So I trust her.
So the Forest Park zip code is not working on our.
Well,
website.
No, I think she
got
says
it.
The zip code finder.
Okay.
Or the you know that's that
well,
you type
I'm,
in.
Let's find out, shall we? I'll
all
go.
Right, Heather's going to go and check it out and see if it works. Just go to thecareoftrees.com. And then find a service. Quickly, before we get to decorating the outdoor trees, one more thing about buying a cut tree. If they're sitting outside before you bring it home, I imagine they don't dry out as quickly because it's cooler. But the longer a tree is in a lot, I would think the drier it gets the less it's likely to hydrate up, even if you cut the end off.
Right. Yeah, no, the longer they
sit. I think
it
depends on temperatures. From the time that it's cut at the tree farm, it depends a lot on the temperatures and just what's going on from the time that it's cut to the time that it gets to the place you're going to buy it from.
Heather.
So if it was later cut, you know, then it's going to last longer. And if it's cooler, where the water's not going to evaporate out of the needles, it's going to last longer as well.
Yeah, so, and this is a reason why people go to tree farms and cut themselves, trees for themselves, because, as they say, you don't know where that tree's been. All right, so, now we're saving people from burning down their homes. What about saving people from mutilating their trees outdoors? Tom, you are the senior designer. And actually, Tom has a lethal weapon in his hand right now. And
new light bulbs.
It's an icicle that you could murder somebody with. I have never seen a decoration that large.
It hangs on the outside gutter of the house, and it looks like it's dripping. It's all LED lights inside, and it looks like it's dripping down the outside of the icicle.
And how many of those are on a string?
You can put as many as you want. You use these. It's an accent piece on the corner of the house.
Oh wait! So what do you plug that into?
It goes into the standard C9 plug that's up on the roof line. You'd put that on a roof line.
Wait! What's a standard C? See, don't jargon me to death.
It's a standard light bulb. You know the old fashioned.
It's a screw in light bulb, like a you know the when you were young those fat glass bulbs that would go
the
in.
The longer ones.
They had the fatter end that actually screwed into an actual light.
Yeah,
and then on
you
the
should
string.
Start off with the minis versus the C9s.
Yeah, this
the
is
C7,
a larger one.
C5s. Give a little education on light bulb sizes for.
Yeah, this is one of the largest
this
light bulbs.
Lit up, but, I imagine, is so. It looks like a real icicle, and it's going to light up. I assume like white on the inside.
And it drips on the inside down.
Oh, how
down.
Pretty!
Now, how do you set up that C9 fixture there? I mean, what are you doing with? Is it on a cord, or you got it?
Yeah, it's on a cord that hooks to like the gutter on the outside of the
so
roof.
So you'd have to buy. I mean, normally you'd have a special cord, wouldn't you?
It's a standard C9 cord. It's a standard
See,
cord.
See, how ignorant am I?
C9 attachment.
Yeah, it's...
Okay. So I could get a C9. So I could put three or four of these up.
On the corners of the house.
On the corners?
Accent, yeah.
You were telling me that this is really high-end stuff, that if you had a full string... What's a full string? What do you consider a full string?
A full string is like a dozen of them.
And you said it's like $400
$400 for those.
What does each one of these lights cost?
I don't even know. I mean, seriously.
$100 You know?
No, they're about $20-25 a piece. So.
Wow. Sorry, that's high end, but it's spectacular.
You can put it under a truck and run it over, and it won't break either.
Because nice, and it's LED.
It's LED, and it uses no the whole string.
That's what holiday lighting guys do. They run over lights with trucks.
That's one of my fun parts of my job is I get to try and break things.
You test them.
Yeah, I test everything.
Wow. All right. Well, that's corner of the house, but a lot of people want to hang lights on trees. And let's talk. We'll talk practical and horticulture first, and then go to aesthetic. All right, in terms of horticulture, what are the mistakes people make and how do they harm their trees?
Put the lights on too tight and leave them on way too long. I mean, they'll leave them on year after year, and they end up, it chokes the tree out. It girdles the tree.
I've seen those pictures of where the bark of the tree ends up enveloping whatever substance is wrapped around it.
Right.
And that can hurt the tree,
that'll
obviously.
Hurt the tree. That's how they put them on just way too tight and hurt them that way.
And leave them on. Yeah, I don't know why you would leave that on your tree all year long.
They're, because of the cost of putting them up, people think they could leave them up for longer. But the wire itself breaks down, so.
Yeah, but also taking them down and putting them up can be dangerous to a tree,
you're
right?
You're pulling the buds off. When some people grab a hold and just yank on them, they pull the buds off, the end branches and everywhere else, and break branches themselves, too.
Yeah.
So.
It's often cold when you're taking them down, and you're cold, and so you just want to get inside as quick as possible, and you yank on the cord and break branches and damage the tree.
So don't do that. When you're pulling the cord down, don't yank on it and strip your tree, because you're going to break branches, you're going to rip up all the buds.
Pull the buds off for the next year so you get fewer leaves on that. It over the winter, damages the tree just as much as anything else. So.
Yeah. All right. Other aesthetic, safety considerations, getting up there with a ladder.
I've got a few friends who have fallen off ladders, fallen off roofs and stuff, putting their own lights up, and
nice.
Now they're my clients, so it's...
And now they're your clients?
There's a few of them who are my clients, so...
Wait.
It's not a good way to get business.
I don't like that kind of business, but...
I don't blame you. I mean, that's dangerous stuff.
Yeah, you don't... We've got the professional equipment we tie in. You want someone, you got to tie into the place, make sure you're stable before you go up in these trees.
Uh-huh. Well, you do, what are some of the fancier, do you do Michigan Avenue or did somebody else do that?
Someone's doing Michigan. I don't know how many, we do some stuff on Michigan Avenue or around Chicago. I don't know what the actual locations. We've got like Woodstock, the center of Woodstock is another location. We do the downtown Woodstock.
Oh, really? You do the center of Woodstock?
Yeah.
And all right, aesthetic considerations here.
One other safety concern, Mike, is especially for the tree, is with the electricity, you want to make sure you got it wired the right way because it'll short and you can damage the tree with burning. Where the extension cords plug in can get hot. If it gets wet, sometimes it can short out and actually burn the tree.
Yeah, that is a consideration. I put a link on the... I thought I did. I don't know that I did. I guess I didn't. I was looking at one website and said, you've really got to be careful about what kind of cords you use outside, too.
Right. They've got to be able to hold the power you're drawing out. These are the old-fashioned lights, the old mini lights. If you go into LEDs, it's a lot less power now.
Does that make it safer?
A lot safer. LEDs are a lot safer all the way around.
What's the price thing about LEDs now? Are they finally coming down to a reasonable level?
They're coming down. The old lights are like $7, and the LEDs are still about 11. So,
well, see why.
But the LEDs can be used a lot longer, though. So in reality, they're not more; they have a longer lifespan.
Yeah,
right. You've got 8
so,
years.
So yeah, you're paying more up front, but in the long run, they're not costing any more. If not, they might actually be costing less with the less power they use, with the safety considerations. In reality, they're costing less than the conventional ones.
And it makes me wonder why incandescents are made anymore, or even manufactured.
They're getting harder to find. I know that's where I was off in northern Wisconsin trying to find incandescents in bulk. So they're made less this year. They're getting harder to find. More LEDs are coming out, and I see within the next 2 years you're going to see pretty much all
LEDs. That's good,
though.
That's good. It's like, get out of this, the old, and, you know, and then, of course, there are the people who've had their string for 15 years, and by some miracle, it still lights up.
Right.
And, because mine usually dies the first year, you know, before the end of the season, generally.
I remember growing up using ones my mom used when she was a kid. Strings of lights.
Oh, we had those, you know, where you had the big honking bulbs. And the ones you could, the thing I miss, and I know it's probably really dangerous, those bubbling lights.
I have sets of those.
They still have those. You can still order those.
But you can't do that with an LED light.
No, LEDs won't heat up the water.
Because there's no heat.
Yeah.
So that is the one. I like the bubbling lights.
You can get those bubbly things now as night lights that plug into a night light that'll plug into, like, let's say, have a little.
So you just have one.
Right.
Okay, it's not
bad.
But
it's safer than having all those hot lights on, it's
one dried out tree.
You get one dried out tree and a fire hazard to a cute little nightlight.
What about the colors? The incandescent colors are different from the LED colors, and some people complain that a blue really looks purple with the LED.
They're getting better with the color mixes. One of the they called the winter white was that bluish colored.
Yeah, right.
Light.
Maybe that was it. The white doesn't even look white; it looks blue.
Right. They've got now where it's a yellow. LED it's got a yellow tint to it. Like the one, these light bulbs have yellow in them. So they,
the big icicle you're going to stab me with. Yeah.
Yeah. They look more natural colored, like the old fashioned twinkle lights.
Uh huh. And in terms of getting the best effect on a tree, what are your tips on that, Tom? And by the way, that's Tom Kroc from the Care of Trees, senior designer, Sean Kingzett, district manager from Chicago office of the Care of Trees is on the phone. What are the tips you give people to have the best effect?
Make it even. I mean, no matter, you just got to make the tree look even with the same amount of lights on each part of it as you put it up.
I'm not sure what you mean, make it even.
If you put a lot on one side of the tree, you put the same amount on the other side of the tree.
Oh, yeah, but you know how that happens, and this is, so you got to give me advice on this too, which is you start wrapping around a branch, and you go, okay, I've got this figured out, and then you get to the second part of the tree and you realize you don't have enough light, so you just don't make it as tight. This is the point where you got to go out and buy another string, is
right
it?
Well, no, actually what you should do is start from the beginning and keep it loose from the beginning and go back and forth across the entire tree.
What do you mean go back and forth? You mean
you go like in and out on each branch?
Yeah, but you keep moving throughout the entire tree as opposed to just doing one side of it really thick and then you run out.
Yeah.
The other why I do the entire tree on different strings is if one string blows out in the middle of it, it doesn't knock out a hole in the tree. It looks like the whole tree is still lit.
Ah.
So if you do one side with all one string and that string dies, that whole side of the tree is done or it's out.
Right. So and then now you're going back to scratch, and that's just a real pain.
Spread them out through the entire
tree. I mean, I've got a little sumac in front that I try to wrap stuff around, and just I don't even need a ladder for it, and it still takes forever. To get it done. I don't know where you guys find the patience. Well, you're being paid, so that's different.
Well, that helps.
Yeah.
We don't have a choice to
touch. Yeah, it's true. You'll get fired if you don't do it right.
I do love when they wrap the whole tree, though, in the white lights, and they get the trunk and, like, the most of the, main limbs. It's so gorgeous.
Yeah, but isn't that fairly expensive?
That's really expensive to do that much time on a tree. Like you're saying,
so
you got to have patience because it does take a lot of times to do all this stuff.
Yeah,
so.
And we're in a point where nobody's got any money except the rich people. And don't worry, you're not going to get taxed. But the poor people, like me, want to do this, and we want to make something look nice, and it's hard to get all that. Is there a tip to save some money?
Stay on the outside shell of the tree. I mean, if you're going to do a tree, go on the outside,
like
around the edge. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't like
the canopy wrap.
The canopy, yeah.
The canopy. And so there are nets that do that. Are those effective?
I don't like the nets because you can't fix them once they break, and they look very, everything's squared looking when you look at the tree. It doesn't look natural to the tree.
So if you're going to do a netting, just do the your own wires and do
right.
It, which is what I've done in the past, and usually it doesn't look bad. Sometimes I just throw the thing at
I'm
the...
super anal retentive woman about my Christmas tree. I don't like my wires to show. So I've used far too many lights on a tree before because I'd start at the center trunk, wrap down one branch, wrap it back, move to the next one.
But
you
don't have a house. How do you do this?
I did this, I think one year I spent 7 hours just putting lights on the tree.
No, are you talking about indoors?
Yes.
Oh, I'm talking outdoors.
On the Christmas tree in the house. You're anal about
the Christmas tree in the house.
I'm anal about the ones outside, too. I don't like the wires showing there, either.
On the outside ones, when it gets dark out at night and the lights come on, you don't see the wires.
Yeah.
Right.
Exactly. But yeah, it's definitely more for my tree itself. But.
That's Tom Kroc, senior designer for the Care of Trees, and Sean King-Zed is district manager of the Chicago office. I want you, Tom, I'm going to ask Sean a question here. Think of any other tips we've missed before I let you go here, but I wanted to get to Sean real quick about something that I've been harping on this fall, and that is how dry it's been in this area. And I guess east into Indiana has been even worse. And what people should be thinking about who have trees, especially trees they've planted this year or in the past couple of years, and their evergreens outdoors. What are you telling folks right now, Sean?
Yeah, I agree. You got to, fall droughts are very deceptive. You know, the temperatures drop and the leaves fall off, and so you're not really thinking, oh my gosh, you know, this is droughty. If it's 100 degrees out and it hasn't rained, it's easy to see, oh, I need to water my plants. But in this fall drought stuff, it's deceptive. You forget about watering. You call your irrigation company up and they shut it off, or you bring your sprinklers and your soaker hoses in. Especially new plants that you put in this late season, get them watered a couple more times. If the ground hasn't frozen yet, and we haven't had that much frost.
No, not at all.
If the ground hasn't frozen, then water. Roots keep growing. Roots will die in drought as the soils dry out. The fine root hairs that are absorbing water and nutrients, they will die back. And then if those roots die back come next spring, the tree could die back, or the tree could die outright.
Go ahead.
But if you keep watering, you know, you'll keep the moisture there so that the roots will continue to grow, or at least not die, so that then next spring the tree's set up to leaf out and grow.
And I'm betting that you're going to get calls in the spring from people who are saying, my tree's not leafing out all the way. What's wrong?
Yeah. Now, sometimes it's winter injury, but I think fall drought is often what causes that. I think we're going to see a lot of that, both probably in mature shade trees that might have been struggling a little bit already. Maybe they had some sort of root problem or had construction injury or some other issue during the summertime. Now this fall drought hits them. Come next spring, those trees might be struggling.
So that's a sort of a thing with trees in general, Sean, that people don't quite grasp. You have to think in time. It's not immediately. Your tree isn't often immediately affected. Somewhere down the road, 6 months or a year, or sometimes even a couple of years, and then you notice it. And sometimes you have to think back to what happened a couple of years before.
Yeah, it's actually an interesting part about being an arborist is because of that time lag. You got to have to be a little bit of a detective and think back. Okay, what types of things have happened? And the hard thing is to move from reactive, you know, because once the tree is dying back, you can't do much about it and be preventative instead. Whether that's watering or mulching or, we use these organic tea things to improve the soil conditions. All these different things are preventative versus waiting for there to be a problem and then trying to fix it when your trees are already struggling.
And thank
it's
you.
It's much better to be preventative.
Thank you for using the word preventative and not proactive. Proactive is not a word. I'm getting really pinheady here today. And on my website, mikenovak.net, you go to this week's show. One of the links I have is a press release that the Morton Arboretum sent out this week about the dry spell. You might want to take a look at that. O'Hare has received only, and we'll talk to Rick DeMaio in a second. Let's get him on the phone, as a matter of fact. Rick DeMaio will tell us that O'Hare has received only 2.46 inches of rainfall since September 6th compared to the normal 6.5 inches. It's a deficit of 63%. According to the National Weather Service. At the Arboretum, they received 2.95, which was a 57% deficit. So we're getting half the rain that we normally do. And we got faked out because we had so much rain earlier in the season. But guess what? That goes away.
Yeah, it was so lush in the summer. I'm actually worried about that, is that, you know, plants put on so much growth because of the moisture that we did get during the growing season, now that the soils are drying out and these roots are dying back, how is the tree going to have enough roots to support that lush growth on the top?
Yeah, and once you lose those roots, it's really hard to get them back. You just can't, you know, you can't go out and buy new roots for a tree. As a matter of fact, let's bring in right now Rick DeMaio, our meteorologist. I was just talking about our rain deficit. Rick, and by the way, good morning.
Yeah, good morning, Mike. We were talking about that last week, the rain deficit. It continues to be quite the deficit, down almost an inch and a half for the month, and probably 3 inches since the beginning of October, and almost 5 inches since the beginning of September.
And since we're telling people to get out there with a drip hose, do you see any significant rain coming in the near future?
No, nothing significant. In fact, even this next system that comes in probably late Monday night and into Tuesday, I'm looking at actually some of the what we call the gridded data, the numerical model data as we speak, and it's only pushing out about a quarter of an inch of rain. So, you know, even that much on soil that's this dry is most likely going to evaporate. What's happening, Mike, is we're in a very, very fast-moving pattern. Every time something comes through that potentially could give us precipitation, it either moves through real fast or it kind of moves either north or south of us. So this is just one of those things that we just seem to be on the short end of the stick from a standpoint of getting something over us that we need that could last for, you know, maybe, you know, 36 to 48 hours. It's, you know, droughts and dry spells are kind of interesting. You're halfway through it when you realize you're into it, you know?
Yeah.
And the next thing you know, you go, well, how did that happen? And you look back at a couple of different events that might have happened that didn't happen. And then the same thing goes along with the wet pattern that we had in June and July. All of a sudden, it's like, well, wait a minute. How do we have that? Well, it just seems like every single storm system that came through the Midwest was basically right over the top of us.
That's Rick DeMaio, and we're going to finish up with his weather forecast in just a second. I want to wrap up with Sean Kingzett and Tom Kroc from the Care of Trees. So, Sean, our advice stands, which is get out the drip hoses. Even if your mature trees have been suffering a little bit, if you had some construction, I mean, look at how the tree has been reacting and the kinds of things it's likely to have gone through, and it can't hurt ever to especially in a dry spell, to get the drip hose out and put it at the base of the tree. You know, depending on the size of the tree, anywhere from half an hour to a couple of hours. And also, don't put the water on very fast at all. When we say trickle, it's just a trickle. Tom's nodding over
there.
Yeah,
just a little.
Yeah, you want the water to penetrate into the soil and not just run off, and you want it to you know, get down deeper into the soil profile.
And by the same token, if you do that, put some mulch down over it, because water can still evaporate at this time of year.
Mulch helps hold that moisture. The organic matter in the mulch as it decomposes is what holds moisture. And that's actually where tree roots get their moisture from, is the roots grow around organic matter, and they're actually absorbing the water from that portion of the soil. So mulching is a great way to improve the amount of water that your soil can hold.
That's Sean Kingzett from the Care of Trees. Tom, I asked you if you had one more tip before we let you go. Anything?
Just the power, what you're using for power.
Yeah.
Don't overdo the cords that you're using, because that's where most of the fires start, is on the cords.
Now, how do you know if how much to use? Is there a rule of thumb?
That's on websites. You can go on the website and find out, you know, amps, watts. It's called amps, watts chart. Just Google that and it'll come up and it'll give you a chart of what you're pulling. But if you're blowing the circuit every time you turn your lights on, you got way too much on there.
there's a tip. But even with LEDs?
LEDs, you're...
Oh, you're talking incandescents.
The old kind, the new LED stuff, it's just, I don't know. I haven't had a problem with them yet. I'm sure they're out there and they'll come out.
Yeah.
But I haven't seen anything come out of it yet.
So the safest thing is to get updated, get rid of the old incandescents and get the LED.
The LEDs, yeah.
You know, and if you don't have a lot of money, you know, maybe buy fewer sets or buy a couple of sets this year. Then you can add to it next year and so forth, and buy, you know, a little bit, because they do hang on.
Right.
And they last longer than the incandescents.
Yeah, 8 years is what they figure the average of the LED is going to be, an 8-year light. So.
All right. Tom Kroc and Sean Kingzett from the Carrot Trees. Of course, if you want, as I mentioned before, they're great sponsors of the Mike Novak Show. You can give them a call at 847-394-4220 or go to thecareoftrees.com. Heather, did you ever work out that that zip code thingy?
When I keyed in a Forest Park zip code, it gave me an oops error message.
Okay.
We'll pass it on to the right person.
Now, when I typed in an Oak Park zip code, it worked fine. So maybe just a few of them, maybe when they added more, haven't been added to the database.
We'll get that worked out.
We'll get that worked out.
But there was an error message.
We'll get that taken
care
of.
Now, aren't you glad you were on my show? You would never have known that.
Yeah.
Thank you, Twitter. I take back all I said.
Sean, thanks a lot, man. I'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, Mike. Have a great day.
You too. And Tom, I know you brought the whole family. You're going to see Peter Pan today.
Peter Pan today, yeah.
Oh, fun.
Yeah, so enjoy your time in Chicago. It's a big city. Don't get lost.
No, I won't.
Okay. Well,
thank you.
Talk to you later. Rick DeMaio weather in just a second. This is the time of year when I get to do you a favor. If you're listening to the show, you probably have a relative or a good friend who's a gardener, and you're already thinking about the perfect holiday gift for that person. Have you thought about Chicagoland Gardening Magazine? Believe me, it's much more satisfying than some goofy garden tchotchke like a gnome. What else garden crazy? Some of those, I got to tell you.
What about those wind things? You know,
some of them are nice, but you know, I don't know what it is about gardening. I think there's more bad taste in gardening than just about any.
I think there's one realm that has more bad taste.
What's that?
Christmas sweaters.
I'll talk to you about that in a second. Okay. Anyway, while a subscription to Chicagoland Gardening Magazine provides valuable information year-round about your friend's Zone 5 garden, and we are basically in Zone 5 around here, they'll get answers to all of their gardening questions, special reports from their own area in the four-state region around Chicago, and fabulous articles about the best of the best gardening in this region. And then there's my column on the inside back page. I'm that one burned out bulb that makes the whole line go dark. To use a lighting metaphor. Give the gift of Chicagoland Gardening Magazine this year. Call 888-265-3600, 888-265-3600, or go to chicagolandgardening.com.
Cantini Gardens wants you to get into the holiday spirit with wall-to-wall poinsettias. Cantini Gardens in Wheaton presents its Shades of Crimson poinsettia display at the Cantini Greenhouse on Tuesday, November 30th from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. An eye-popping 4,000 poinsettias will be sure to catch your attention at this annual open house. Cantini Horticultural staff members will be on hand to discuss the plants and answer questions. Admission is free, and Shades of Crimson will include self-guided tours of the greenhouse and light refreshments. For more information, go to cantini.org. That's cantigny.org.
Come on in the studio. We've got guests in the studio. Okay. You know Dasher and Dancer and Frasier and Balsam. Those are trees.
There's a tree called Frasier, really?
Yes, there is.
See, I'm a radio person. I don't know about these things. Balsam I knew.
Hello, I'm listening. All right. Anyway, well, if you're into trees, you know Frasier and Balsam and Grand Street Gardens just got their stock in, along with wreaths, garlands, poinsettias, bows, pine cones, and tree stands. It may be a bit early for holiday songs. And no, it's not. But not for holiday decorating. Grand Street Gardens is closed Thanksgiving Day, but stop in Friday or maybe over the weekend. Fall bulbs are 30% off, too. You know what? I'm going to get my bulbs because I didn't get them planted yet. Grand Street Gardens is open Monday through Friday, 10 a.m. to 7 p.m. Weekends, 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. Located at 2200 West Grand Avenue in Chicago. And, you know, I'm not a neatness freak, especially in my garden, which means that when perennial plants collapse in the fall, I often let the foliage stay there as a natural mulch until the spring. But I live in the city, and it's probably been 10 or 12 decades since a deer came wandering through my Logan Square neighborhood. If you do live on a deer highway, you might want to consider cleaning up that spent foliage and using some other kind of mulch for the winter. The good folks at Bobex know that by the end of the winter, deer and rabbits will be looking for anything they can sink their teeth into, including what's left of last year's plants. As for those vulnerable evergreens in your yard, and we told you, get them hydrated. But you can also apply Bobex every 4 to 6 weeks during the winter, and that will help because it's an anti-desiccant. It keeps the water from transpiring and out of the plant. As I always say, read and follow label directions. Bobex is available only at local independent garden centers like Ferraro Garden Spot in Northbrook, Illinois, Seasons Garden Center in Alton, Illinois, Pasquazi Home and Gardens in Barrington, Illinois. Remember, plants thrive and survive with Bobex. This is the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. Now, wait a second. We're going back to Rick DeMaio here in a second. Pull up that microphone. We've got a guest in the studio, and your name is?
Amy.
Amy. And are you going to see Peter Pan today?
Yes.
I've met Amy before, but she was wearing a squirrel costume.
Yes, she was.
Amy was with her dad, Tom Croc, over at the big send-off for Tour de Trees that we did in July. And Amy, you were the best squirrel ever.
Thank you.
And then she rode with Dad, right?
Right.
Yep.
You were a tandem bike. You in the back and Dad in the front.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, you did all the pedaling. You did all the work, right?
I don't know. I'm not sure.
Well, I just wanted to say hi. I'm glad you were here, and she stopped in to see. You know, we should have brought her in at the beginning. We could have had her. She could have answered the questions, and then you would have been spared that time. So, well, have a good time at Peter Pan.
Thank you.
All right. It's a pleasure having you here in the studio. And a pleasure having Rick DeMaio online. Like you said, it's dry. And now we're alternating between cool spells and warm spells. It's yesterday was pretty nippy. Now it's getting warm again today. What's going on?
Well, you know, it's funny, Mike, because the same frontal boundary that was basically south of us yesterday kind of nudged its way back northward, and then now we've gone into a strong southerly flow. And, you know, the funny thing about it is we're, you know, close to 50 degrees for a current temperature right now, and that's normally what the afternoon high is. And it's only 9 o'clock in the morning, and looks like we'll be under southerly flow for at least the next 36 hours. And if we clear out any of these clouds, which it looks like we may do, by late tomorrow afternoon, there's a chance we can make a run at 60 to 65 degrees tomorrow.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
All right. I got to ask you, is this just weather, or is this climate change, or you know?
You know what? It's definitely climate change, and I think it's funny that term hasn't really been thrown around much, but... when you talk about, you know, temperatures across much of the United States, all-time record warm months in October for places like Minnesota and Wisconsin, and then we get into a couple of, you know, heavy snow events across the northern Rockies. I think part of it is due to the fact that we've still had a fairly active tropical season up until a couple of weeks ago. There's still a chance that, you know, we may get one or two. But clearly, you're not going to get those north of the Yucatan Peninsula this time of the year. But much of the southeast basking in incredibly mild weather. And it looks like temperatures probably in the mid-80s from places like Dallas to Atlanta and maybe even parts of southern Virginia. Not mid-80s, but definitely low 80s or close to that by tomorrow afternoon. And, you know, also when you think back of the real bad, you know, weather and snow and cold that we had across the mid-Atlantic, in that six-week period of time in late January and February, all you kept hearing about people was saying, what global warming, what climate change, and then still, as cold and snowy as it was, many places from year to current date, which is, you know, January 1st to November 20th, experiencing some of their warmest temperatures ever for that period of time. That's why I'm always telling people you just can't look at a couple of innings in the game. You got to look at all nine of them to really, you know, really assess how well your team plays.
And it ain't over before it's over.
No, it was over in the first quarter yesterday, Mike.
Oh, I knew you were going to beat me up about that. Hey, listen, I know
I'm a Wisconsin alumni.
No, you know, if anybody's going to win it, I'm rooting for either Wisconsin or Michigan State. Anybody who can beat Ohio State at this point is fine. Michigan's not going to beat Ohio State. Michigan's not going to beat anybody, and I'm wondering when the Rich Rodriguez era is going to be over, but that's a sports question, and this is not a sports show.
We digress.
I heard on the newscast going into my show today that they're talking about snow near L.A.
There's this huge core of cold air that's coming into the southern sections of the, if you want to call it, southwestern part of the United States. So area is probably about 3,000 to 4,000 feet above sea level, may get a little bit of snow. I wouldn't be surprised if the San Gabriels get dusted with 4 or 5 inches of snow. But, you know, those mountains are up about 6,000 to 7,000 feet. Mount Baldy, I think, is over 7. And there's some mountains west of L.A. about up to about 8 or 9. So, yeah, that's typical. You'll get that every once in a while. But, yeah, all the ski resorts out west from Utah into Colorado up into Idaho and Montana are already open right now. They've had nearly 20 inches of snow. They've had a real good solid base, and as long as they can get, you know, nice weather just before, you know, the holidays, they'll open up. And
That's why you're not hearing about climate change, is because there's snow in the mountains. Oh, see, we're getting our snow. It's cold here.
Oh yeah. I'm used to this. That's why when I teach my class. Last week, one of our assignments was to look at this website that Walmart has proudly, you know, introduced to their customers, is how they actually convert cow manure into electricity. I think we've seen some of that before, but it's pretty neat stuff. The only problem is that they're showing you how to do it at the same time they're making yogurt. So it's probably not the best way of promoting the fact that Walmart is going green, you know.
Well, as long as they are.
Yeah, as long as they are.
Yeah. So, all right, so then in the short run, let us know what's happening the rest of this week.
Yeah, short run right now, we have these clouds over. This is all a product of a lot of strong southerly flow. So if we were able to get these clouds rid of, at least getting rid of the clouds across the area, we'd probably break into the upper 50s today. We're not going to do that. So we'll call it cloudy with a high of about 53, 54 today. Drizzle tonight, low 45 to 50, but it'll stay mild through tomorrow. And again, temperatures probably up to close to 60 degrees. And then we'll get one front that comes through here late Monday night into Tuesday. We'll get some light rain, no snow, though. And it looks like kind of dry weather for Wednesday morning. Wednesday afternoon, still somewhat problematic. But I would think most anybody who's driving in and around the Midwest, particularly out to Des Moines, up to Minneapolis, could see some inclement weather. In fact, if you are driving up to Minneapolis Wednesday afternoon, you may want to make it Wednesday morning because it looks like they can get some snow. But anywhere east and south into Michigan, Indiana, southern Illinois, Wednesday afternoon driving, I think you're fine. And then it gets cold around here. Thursday, Thanksgiving Day, temperatures only in the low 30s. Overnight lows probably in the teens and probably only 20s during the day on Friday. So that walk that you make from the shopping mall all the way to your car, clutching those bags that you bought, is going to be a quick one. It's going to be cold next Friday with temperatures only in the 20s.
On Black Friday, huh? I
might be out on Black Friday, so I'll be sure to bundle up because I want a new TV for my new home, and they're going viciously on sale at 4 in the morning on Black Friday.
Oh, great.
In the freezing cold, but you can $800 TV for like $400 is what they're saying.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy how much.
Yeah.
Well, bring a baseball bat with you and just whack anybody
bat,
gets in your way.
I think maybe some golf cleats with the little metal things in them, maybe.
You know, I know, isn't it? It's just sad.
Maybe
though.
If I bring, like, you know, thermoses of hot chocolate and coffee, I'll appear on everyone's good graces since I now know how cold it'll be.
Well, we'll have a report next week from Heather on her
shopping experience.
Rick DeMaio Weather. You can go to DeMaioWeather.com. You can find it on my website on the homepage, Mike Novak. .net, MikeNowak.net. Always a pleasure, Rick. You have a great week, and have a happy Thanksgiving to you.
And you too, Michael. Talk to you next Sunday.
You bet. Bye-bye. Have you made your holiday to-do list yet? Thanksgiving, as we just mentioned, is this Thursday. It means the frenzied days of gift shopping and holiday parties are not far behind. You know, Where's the place you signed to opt out of the holiday season? That's what I want to know.
That's the thing.
Yeah.
There isn't one.
No. Not in America.
Unless you know, have a job that ships you international. But even then.
I'm going to lock the door and tell people to go away. Sid's Greenhouses and Garden Center can help you get through these hectic times with great gifts plus home and party decor. Now, it's okay, really. Everyone's been disappointed by a grocery store poinsettia. And I am going to say poinsettia. We'll talk a little bit later about pronunciation. Mm-hmm. So this year, send a real florist quality poinsettia from SIDS Greenhouses. They deliver throughout the entire Chicagoland area. And in addition to poinsettias, they also have gift baskets custom made to order. So get your list of family, friends, and business associates together today. Call SIDS tomorrow, and it's done already. SIDS can also help with home party decorating. Fresh Thanksgiving and Christmas centerpieces will add a special touch to your holiday table. Plus, SIDS' entire stock of lifelike Christmas trees, decorations, and ornaments are up to 75% off this week. And the fresh cut, that's the one I advise you get. Trees, wreaths, and garlands are in stock as well. They're the real eco-friendly alternative to holiday decorating. SIDS, Chicagoland's premier garden centers, are located in Palos Hills on Southwest Highway and in Bolingbrook on Napier Plainfield Road at Hassert Boulevard.
Spending more time at home these days? Give yourself some room. Renovate your basement or attic. You'll increase your living space and your home's resale value, too.
Trust DR Services Unlimited, 847-998-1687 for your remodeling needs, including additions, renovations, and other home improvements. Rated A-plus by the Better Business Bureau and recommended on Angie's List. DR is a proud member of NARI. DR provides exceptional quality at a fair price. Contact DR at 847-998-1687 or at RestoreTheNorthShore.com.
And I should mention, next week on the program, the Frozen Robins are back. In the 10 o'clock hour. This is my caroling group, and you can see our picture on my the homepage of my website, mikenovak.net.
You guys look so festive.
We are festive.
You are.
And we're next to Santa. Santa. It's right below the video of the Sandhill Cranes, which I hope you take a look at and let me know about whether you enjoy that. Write to Mike at MikeNovak.net. But the Frozen Robins are right there, and we're going to be caroling next Friday, 10 a.m. to noon, at the Wonderland Express at the Chicago Botanic Garden. If you haven't been to the Wonderland Express, it is so cool. Trains and models, little models of different iconic buildings in Chicago. It's very festive. They even have fake snow. You go indoors and it snows indoors.
I'll come with William.
I think you ought to bring William.
I will. If there's trains involved.
Yep.
Yeah.
All right, cool.
We'll be there.
All right. In the next hour, we talk some more decorating and farmers. Stick around.
This hour of the Mike Novak Show is brought to you by The Care of Trees. Our business's people and their love for trees. And by SIDS Greenhouses, Chicagoland's premier garden centers. And by WRD Environmental, creating sustainable landscapes for today and tomorrow. Here he is again, Mike Novak.
Who is fast and thorough and sharp as a tack. She's playing with her jewelry. She's putting up.
It's cake.
She's touring the facility and picking up slack. I want a girl with a short skirt and a long jacket.
They want to hit a Thanksgiving song. All right.
Yeah, do a little Thanksgiving tribute.
This is a Thanksgiving song. I hope you enjoy it.
Love to eat turkey. Love to eat turkey. Oh, I love you. Love to eat turkey, cause it's good. Love to eat turkey like a good boy should, cause it's turkey to eat. So good.
Turkey is some good food.
That clapping's messing my head up, man.
Adam Sandler, shocking.
Yeah, really.
Especially back then. That was the 90s, I think, he did the turkey song.
Wow, that's such a long time ago.
It was 10 plus years ago. Could be almost 20 years old now, that
Don't
song.
Don't even start.
It could be.
Don't even start with me about,
now I'm gonna find
about
out how
a long time ago, okay? Don't even
well,
start
yes,
with me.
Yes, I'm sorry, I don't remember the 70s.
I don't either.
But you were there.
I just don't remember it.
That's why you garden, right?
Yeah.
It's peaceful. You know,
speaking of that, actually, that's a perfect segue, okay? That is a perfect segue because we got that call a couple of weeks ago from Rachel. who asked about, she said, and then she wrote, I told her right back to me about this. My name is Rachel, and I have a question about salvia.
That's right. Salvia is how you say it?
Salvia is, yeah, is the general name of the plant, sort of the common name and the genus. I have purchased this plant at Lowe's and from a plant catalog, so I was surprised that an internet search turned up information that salvia is considered a dangerous drug. How can this be? Any help you can provide would be greatly appreciated. Thank you, Rachel. And then I asked her to send me the exact name. I said, you still have the tag, so we know what we're dealing with. And she has Salvia superba snowhill is what she had. So I went online and started looking up different kinds of... Well, I typed in the way she did, sort of, and of course none of this is going to load for me on my computer here. This is so annoying. All right. I can't believe this. Now I'm going to have to do this again. Let me just type.
Laptop failure? Bad laptop.
No, it's not the laptop's fault. It's the fact that I can't get online on my laptop here. They don't there's no Wi-Fi in the building. So, if I type this, hold on just a second, because this should be not too difficult to find. I had typed in, there are certain salvias. There's one in particular that is...
It's a wicked plant?
Yeah, like we talked to with Amy Stewart. And I'm typing in salvia... Oh, there it is. Divinorum. Okay.
Ooh, it sounds kind of witchy.
Yeah, and when I typed in salvia divinorum, I started finding things with... for instance, there's this thing from NPR. Here's the headline, salvia, legal herb, hallucinogen, draws teens and critics, NPR. And then you've got, if you type in, you'll find head shops online that sell salvia divinorum. You'd have to...
The internet is a world of good and bad.
And here's one, cheap salvia divinorum. Well, of course, I want the cheap stuff. And here it is. It's
no wonder you don't remember the 70s.
It's but I wasn't gardening in the 70s.
Sure.
I didn't know anything. Salvia divinorum is a powerful herb that produces psychedelic qualities upon use. The effects of salvia divinorum are described as mind-altering experiences that vary depending on the strength of extract used.
The amount of brain cells killed.
and they say here, legal in most of the U.S. as of time of writing this, which, and none of these websites are dated.
Right.
So it's 1944 was when this page was posted. Salvia divinorum is a unique way, and they have it in italics, unique way to experience altered states of reality that often... Do we have any psychedelic music here? We need some. Yeah. That often provide euphoric journeys that one could not explore otherwise. Well... and of course on this site it says it's an herb. There are no known risk of addiction and no known long-term side effects. Well, they're selling it on this website. So, but apparently divinorum has got some properties that,
it called? Salvia.
Salvia.
And there's other forms that are perfectly fine.
What's
the most common one that you see in homes?
The most common ones are the annual salvia, that people plant, and they buy them at the nurseries, and you can get various kinds of annual salvia varieties. Salvia officinalis, let's see here. They're the plants with the red stalks and sometimes purple stalks. I mean, you see them everywhere. I'm not being very articulate about it, but a lot of people buy salvias. But don't try to eat those and don't try to smoke those, please. I'm just saying, somebody wrote me. And, yeah, there's one variety that if you want to, and you can go to websites and purchase this stuff. I don't know if it works. I don't know if it's hallucinogenic. I've never tried it. I'm not going to do that. And I think, you might be a little nutty if you do, but maybe you're not. Maybe it does work. I don't know. But most of the salvia you plant is not going to get you off. Unless you really like gardening. Wow, that looks good. I feel
well,
very...
Well, see, that's what Amy said, that I these odd people walk out into the woods and just feel like, oh, I'm kind of, you know, a little pecked. I'll just eat something growing out of the ground here and then get rushed to the ER, you know, and they're bleeding out their eardrums. Like, that's always smart.
I mean, here's salvia. Here's a nice picture of it right here, Heather. Flip around
there.
That's
pretty.
Yeah, isn't that nice? That is...
That reminds me of, like, heather or lilac or something.
Meadow sage. Salvia
so it's
pratensis.
Sage. Salvia is sage, basically?
Well, it's the largest genus of plants in the mint family, Lamiaceae, with approximately 700 to 900 species of shrubs, herbaceous perennials, and annuals. It's commonly one of several genera commonly referred to as sage, okay? Not just this one. When used without modifier, sage generally refers to Salvia officinalis, common sage. However, it is used with modifiers to refer to any member of the genus. The ornamental species are commonly referred to by their genus name, Salvia. All right? So, its Salvia species include annual, biennial, or perennial herbs, along with woody subshrubs. And I could go into how the stems are angled, and I don't think you care. So there you have it. Let's see. Okay, here's selected species and their uses. Many species are used as herbs for ornamental plants, usually for flower interest, and sometimes for their ornamental and aromatic foliage. A selection of the most important species is below, Salvia apiana. Hold on one sec. Apiana, maybe. And that's going to take me to the second thing mm-hmm. that happened, the woman who wrote to me. But online, we've got Marnie Wilson. Hold on a second. Marnie, are you there?
I'm there. Hi, Mike. Hi, Heather.
Hello.
Marnie, are you listening to this conversation? Anything you since you're a floral designer, you throw sage? Well, do you throw sage into your, and do you throw hallucinogenic sage into your designs?
I was thinking how the sage ties into Thanksgiving week. I mean, you know, starting to think about cooking on Thursday, and, you know, the salvia sage herb is used a lot. So,
In terms
of the annual salvias, we use a lot of it. There is a white, Victoria white and Victoria blue that, you know, have a nice vertical structure to them. So we use a lot of salvias. The perennials are great in Illinois.
I have salvia in my yard. I think everybody loves salvia. It's a great plant, whether it's an annual, whether it's a perennial. You were talking about the annuals. It's probably one of the most popular, one of the most popular plants that people buy at garden centers because it's so showy.
Exactly, and it goes all season.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the other thing. You know, probably some of it was still blooming up until a couple of weeks ago.
Yep, absolutely.
Going back to this list, Salvia divinorum, as I mentioned, or diviner's sage, is sometimes cultivated for psychedelic drug effects. The legality of its use is under review in some U.S. states. Then there's Salvia elegans, the pineapple sage. There's Salvia fruticosa, called Greek sage, or just sage, and is grown commonly and harvested as an alternative to common sage. All right, now common sage is that's the Salvia officinalis. I'm getting a little technical here, Marnie.
You sure are working the Latin.
Well, I got to take you to that too, because do you consider yourself good at Latin?
I took Latin in high school.
I hate to break it to you, Marnie, the language is dead. All right.
Oh, darn.
It died.
No, the pharmacy companies keep it going in some level, don't they?
Oh, yeah.
With all that.
The binomial nomenclature keeps it going, which is how you the taxonomy of plants and
animals.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Homo sapiens. Homo sapiens, rather. Homo sapiens. I can't even say. I don't even know what I am.
Horticultural lists.
I'm a different variety, a different family.
Of the Homo sapien horticulturalist? You are all on your own there, Mike.
Yeah. So I got this letter, and bear with me here, Marnie. We'll get to you in a sec.
Okay.
And a woman wrote to me and said, I listened to some of the tail end of your show today. Later, I saw some information on the web. I wanted to share some information about pronunciation of scientific names of some plants you discussed. First, you talked a lot about an event, including lots of poinsettias. You kept on pronouncing it as if it were spelled poinsettia. This is incorrect. I don't know what your educational background is as related to pronunciation. I graduated from grade school, all right? I'm sure about that. But she writes, when I was in college, I took a course in macrobotany, which included a section on scientific names and their pronunciation. It's important to keep the rules because the scientific names are the same in all languages so we can communicate accurately. One element is that many scientific names are created by adding the suffix IA to an existing word, which includes proper names such as the discoverer or describer of a new plant or group. Yeah. And I'm
impressed. Wow.
Can you think of one of those, Marnie? Like, what's the, like Davidii, except that's not IA. That's II. Hmm. So I guess that's the exception to the rule. Anyway.
So what is she saying? Poinsettia?
Yeah, right. She's saying the pronunciation rule for the suffix IA is that it's pronounced pretty much like EA. The I has the long E sound and the A has the schwa.
So poinsettia.
I'm not aware of any exceptions allowed. The people who insist that poinsettia is a permitted alternative pronunciation are speaking from ignorance. There are actually little guidebooks about botanical naming and pronunciation rules. And then she writes, I noticed you and even your guest, she was talking about you, Heather.
Yeah, me.
Yeah, seemed to have trouble pronouncing. It wasn't a guest. It was my producer who is not exactly a horticulturist.
No, I'm learning, but
yes,
no.
She's learning. Seemed to have trouble pronouncing the species name of Salvia divinorum.
Yes.
It's simple. The is that the I or an the I in the species name is short for both. The stress is on the third syllable. And you're, and your guest just said there are many varieties of salvia. True, but at this level of taxonomy, she should have said there are many species of salvia.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Shame on you, Heather.
Sorry.
Varieties are within a species. Otherwise, I really enjoyed what little part of your show I heard today.
Now we did that at like the last 5 minutes, so you're trying to squeeze that in
exactly.
off of our conversation.
Well, that's what I wrote back to her. I said, yeah. We were doing
we just,
this.
I Wikipedia'd it and just was reading it off of the internet.
And Heather is not my guest. And in fact, I'm going to interview you about taxonomy someday.
Okay.
Now, Kathleen did a little research into this, all right? And she found this and wrote to me, according to the Oxford English Dictionary, the I is silent in American pronunciation. It is no more incorrect to pronounce poinsettia as poinsettia in the United States than it is to pronounce Worcester as Worcester in England. I think this is a situation where the common name is the same as the scientific name, but the common name has acquired its own pronunciation. Some scientists might pronounce acacia to, according to the Latin pronunciation, acacia, but it would be silly and pretentious in regular discourse. So, there we go.
Well, Lord knows we don't want to be pretentious.
No, and I'm anything but.
Uh-huh.
So, and I'd be interested in anybody who's got an opinion on this. The number is 773-838-9278, or tweet us, or send us a Facebook message.
I almost want to do a poll of some kind. Do
Why don't
a poll
can we
on
do
your
that?
Website? Poinsettia.
Wait, put a poll on the Facebook page.
Okay.
Do you pronounce it poinsettia or poinsettia?
Mm-hmm.
All right. And now, with that being said, that's all the time we have, Marnie. I can't talk to you. Marnie Wilson, garden designer, Mariani Landscape. How are you this morning?
I'm well, thank you. How are you?
Good. This must be a very busy season for you.
It is busy. We've been working even this morning on building wreaths and containers and garlands for sale at our retail shop in Lake Bluff. But, you know, also preparing and putting to bed our clients' landscapes that we take care of in the Chicago area.
You know, it's interesting. Folks think that landscape companies basically operate from April to June, I think, sometimes. and that's our busy season, obviously. And I count myself in that because that's when I get my most of my questions and advertisers are most interested in working with me. But, you're doing stuff all year round, obviously. And this is just another one of those busy seasons where you start putting stuff together for the holidays. And when do you start preparing for the holidays in terms of getting your materials together for containers and outdoor displays?
A lot of, you know, we obviously start our planning all year for it, but we, you know, at the end of the season, you know, September, October, we've had a great fall this year. We've started, you know, looking around in our own landscapes for things that we can use in winter containers, you know, looking for dried hydrangea heads or sedum or feather grass or things that, you know, look good now that maybe we can use later. Drying those materials so that we can use them.
Yeah, and that's something important to think about. That for the winter containers, you except for evergreens, most of your material is dried, and you need to plan ahead for that, as you say.
Exactly. Yeah.
Okay. Before we move forward, a real quick, we did get a caller here. Let's go to line two, Dan Costa. My friend from Vern Goer's Nursery Greenhouse in Hinsdale. Mm-hmm. You're going to bust my chops, aren't you, Dan?
Yeah.
You like doing that.
I sure do. Way back when dinosaurs roamed the earth and I was in college, I took a class in plant taxonomy, and the teacher said that the thing to do with the Latin names is, since it is a dead language, we don't know how they were actually pronounced until we can dig up an ancient Roman and ask him. But the thing is to pronounce all the letters. And poinsettia is the proper way of saying it, named after the man who discovered it in Mexico.
Uh-huh.
And his name was Poinsett, and so they put the IA on the back end to make it a Latinized version.
Uh-huh.
And so since you pronounce all the letters, it is poinsettia.
Says you. Wait.
We have tweets and Facebooks about poinsettia and pronunciation from producer Gregory Alexander of the Hal Spark Show.
Uh-huh.
He is saying that I have researched this in the past, and it is poinsettia, four syllables, is the proper way. Mm-hmm. A Facebook friend, Miss Patty, says she says poinsettia here in Cincinnati, Ohio.
God loves Cincinnati, Ohio.
And Zamboni on Twitter, she censored herself because it involved inappropriate language.
And My Skinny Garden says the show is going...
We're on thin ice. We're in dangerous territory.
Yeah, she says the show is going in a very dangerous area.
Who says plants aren't controversial?
Yeah. All right, Dan Costa, my advice to you, mm-hmm. Never call this number again.
Okay.
Talk to you later.
I used to have a customer back in wholesale days. She called them ponzetters.
That's what I'm going to call them from now on, ponzetters.
Ponzetters?
Yeah.
Wow. Now that's brutal. That's
right.
Mutilation.
Dan, happy Thanksgiving to you.
Happy Thanksgiving to you, too, and to Heather as well.
Thank you. Bye-bye. This is the Mike Novak Show, going in dangerous territory about pronunciation. Marnie Wilson, a garden designer from Mariani Landscape, is on the line with us. Let's talk about some design basics. I think, Marnie, that some people who grow plants in their yard have no problem with that, and their gardens look beautiful, and then it comes to a container, and they panic, and they freak out, because they think, oh, I'm not a designer, I can't do this, I can grow plants, but what do I do in a container? Where do you start?
Well, you start, obviously, with the basics, I mean, the potting soil or sand or branches in the pot. I think you have to look at where it is going and look at the scale and size of your container. For instance, long, tall containers are going to require a stronger vertical line. You know, so you'd put branches or something to get some height in a taller container.
Mm-hmm.
And a smaller, you know, round, shallow bowl can take a lower arrangement. So I think you gotta look at where it's going and look at what's around it. And then, you know, in terms of physical foundation, I think you've got to take all your summer plants or fall plants out and put a good base of either potting soil or sand, or some people remove all the soil and put in branches. you know, that, that creates sort of a cage in there if you're worried about the freeze and thaw.
Well, that's what I was going to say, is that in the fall, if you're not putting in a live plant, and you could put a live plant in a container, but chances are the root ball would freeze, right?
Right.
So why would you have soil at all except to hold the branches upright?
Exactly. And you know, you do have to ensure that there's drainage, because if it's lifted off of the ground, I mean, concrete or stone or, other porous container needs to be lifted off, because it's how the ice would attach it to the ground that's going to cause it to crack. So lift it up, ensure drainage, and
when you say lift it up, so you put what, a brick under, a couple of bricks under it, or?
Yeah, or just a little shim or something, so that it's up off the ground, so it doesn't, actually freeze to the, your patio.
Well, that's assuming you're using terracotta or ceramic, but if you've got plastic, you're not going to have that problem of the plastic cracking.
No, plastic will be fine. Terracotta, even when lifted, it depends upon its quality.
What about those containers that claim they are insulated? That I don't even know what the resin is that they use. Are you familiar with that material? You know what I'm talking about?
Well, there's some containers that are like that polyfoam.
Right.
They're very light. It's a polyfoam, and there's some others that are a fiber clay, which is sort of a mixture of fiberglass and clay, maybe, that, they've gotten a lot better recently and can survive, a lot of seasons outdoors. I mean, I've had some that, have lasted 5-6 years outside.
That's pretty good, considering our winters, I would think.
Exactly.
When we do freeze, when we don't have global warming, in effect. That is Marnie Wilson, garden designer with Mariani Landscape. And by the way, their website is MarianiLandscape.com, MARIANI Landscape.com. Now, what about putting, can you change out containers? I imagine some people want to put together a Thanksgiving thing, but then it morphs into a Christmas thing, then it morphs into a winter thing. How do you do that?
I think you've got to, right now, before any soil or anything freezes, is get the foundation in and use an evergreen or something as the base of it. I'd recommend a noble fir or silver fir.
That was a question I was going to ask, too. Are there particular evergreens that you like as a base, and tell me why you like them?
I do like noble fir and silver fir because they tend to stay green. Some of the cedars brown out after a while. So these really do stay green all through the winter. So if you can get a base, and they also have a stronger branching structure. They're not quite as arching. They'll provide the good foundation that you need. So I'd recommend getting that stuff in there as your foundation. And then for Thanksgiving, you put in, a nice brown hydrangea or, twigs that aren't more, something that's sort of more natural looking now. Some people still have pumpkins laying around that you could sort of tuck into the sides to provide sort of a Thanksgiving arrangement.
Mm-hmm. The little ones, I guess, because my jack-o'-lantern kind of collapsed, and not only that, the squirrels came after it on the porch, and we would sit there in the front door, look out the window, and see the squirrel just kind of feasting on the pumpkin. So
I told you what I did to a squirrel when I trapped it in a pumpkin, didn't I?
Yeah, you did. It's a pretty funny story.
It ate a hole, and it was a fresh pumpkin. It had yet to be carved into a jack-o'-lantern. It was a whole pumpkin. It ate through the rind and burrowed inside the pumpkin. And I picked it up with the foot mat on the porch, and I shook it while the squirrel was inside the pumpkin, violently, mind you. I didn't hurt the squirrel, but I gave him a good shaking.
You know what?
He was covered in orange goo.
You just made the top 10 list for PETA, okay?
I know.
You are now.
I didn't hurt him. I just wanted him to never come on my porch again.
You are now on PETA's most wanted list.
Only for squirrels. And I'm sorry, the rats with fuzzy tails are just cute.
But back to
sorry, but that's what I did to a squirrel and the pumpkin. Well, I didn't know Bobex existed yet, so.
See, you got to understand.
Hey, I'll take back the jack-o'-lantern. The harder-shelled gourds may be more.
There we go. but yeah, because and then after the holiday, what you remove those and you replace them with what as we get into Christmas?
As you get into Christmas or Hanukkah, you can add things like winterberry, which has a nice red berry. Other berries that are available. Eucalyptus, you can start adding boxwood or variegated boxwood. Junipers have a nice blueberry that you could even put in before Thanksgiving.
Yeah, junipers don't they make gin out of that?
They do.
So
you're talking your sage and now your juniper. Yeah.
There's a theme going on in this show.
I think the holidays are scaring you a little bit more than you think, Mr. Novak. You're like, how can I drink myself through this? I'll just gnaw on some junipers.
Why not? But you're right. Junipers are good. Now, one of the things, we're talking about if you do this yourself at home, Marnie, but a lot of folks would prefer just to have somebody come out and do it for them. And also because, you know, I've been out there and I've done these kinds of decorations myself, and some of these branches are pricey. It's not always cheap to do this.
They are pricey, and there is, you know, sometimes you'll get a bundle and you'll take it out and you'll have one great branch, but the rest are not looking so good. So there's definitely waste involved if you do it yourself and buy it. So that's why we can come out and do it for you.
Okay. And obviously, Mariani Landscape can do it for you, but it depends on your budget. One of the things I was looking at in the information that I got sent was, do you actually do in ground displays too at this time of year, and what can you do?
We for many of our landscape clients, as we're putting their gardens to bed, or you know they have annual beds, we would lay mulching boughs to protect the soil down and, you know, any mud splashing and just kind of insulates any plant material or perennials that are under that. So, you could lay a nice foundation of, you know, spruce or pines or something. You could do them horizontally. You could do them vertically to create sort of a forest effect.
Mm-hmm.
To make it a little bit more festive, you could put in red twig dogwood or yellow dogwood vertically into the soil, you know, in clusters and bunches to, spruce that up.
Well, those kinds of twigs are your friends in a display like that to create a little interest, vertical interest and color, especially you've got yellow twig and red twig, dogwood, and they, especially if after it snows, they really kind of stick out.
Absolutely. And even the texture of the boughs on beds or in the garden beds is very nice.
And okay, I'll give you a couple of tips that I've done, and I don't know if you advise this at all.
Okay.
But one of the things I've done when I've had to do more than one container, and sometimes I've helped people with their containers, mm-hmm. I'll go and buy a cheap Christmas tree.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, whether it's a Fraser or what was the other one you like, Balsam?
Balsam. And they're less expensive, too, the balsam.
Right, they are. And if you get a small one, you've still got plenty to do a container. And then you just cut the branches off, you know, rather than going to a store and buying the branches that are already cut, which costs you a lot more money, just buy the tree.
Yeah,
and you can cut all the branches off, use as many as you want in containers, give some to friends, and put the rest in your garden to use as a mulch on your garden beds.
That's a very good tip. Yeah.
I like that. Thank you very much. And the other thing that I did, well, it was because I was in a play. And somebody had, for part of the play, had taken branches and painted them white.
Mm.
And I just used, I said, you know, the play finished. I said, can I have the set design? Can I take it home with me? And he said, yeah, sure. So I loaded up the car, and I had all these white branches, and they look great. And, I don't know how many people want to go out and paint their own branches, but if you don't have the money to go buy the ones at the store, which can be a little pricey, as I say, that might be a good way to do it.
Yeah, really brighten. Does the white branches really brighten up a dark space? You know, if you're on the north side of a home or something, or if you have a darker entryway, the white really would look neat. But and at night too, if they're especially if they're lit.
Mm-hmm. Any other tips you got for us before I let you go, Marnie?
Well, I just, you know, I think sometimes you don't have to look further than your own yard. Look around. Use found pine cones. You could always use pine cones at the base of any container arrangement. But if you don't want to do it yourself, come visit us in Lake Bluff, 300 Rockland Road, and we can help you with the cut branches, or we've got pre-made containers that you could buy already constructed and plop them by your front door.
And just walk out of there with them.
Absolutely. It's a good way to do it.
That's Marnie Wilson from Mariani Landscape, website, marianilandscape.com. Thank you for visiting with us, and have a wonderful Thanksgiving and a great Christmas.
Great. Thanks, Mike.
Take care now.
Bye-bye. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Now, here's some facts from the care of trees. A new study shows that deciduous plants, especially trees, absorb about a third more of air-polluting chemicals than previously thought. In 1 year, trees in the Chicago region removed approximately 17 tons, that's tons, of carbon monoxide, 93 tons of sulfur dioxide, 98 tons of nitrogen dioxide, and 210 tons of ozone. This research, led by scientists at the National Center for Atmospheric Research in Boulder, Colorado, says that trees reduce pollution, and this is how they do it, by actively removing it from the atmosphere. Leaf stomata, see, now we're getting into Latin again here, and
we got some comments on Latin.
Yeah, we'll get to that in a second. Leaf stomata, which are the pores on the leaf surface, take in polluting gases, which are then absorbed by water inside the leaf. No wonder the Care of Trees wants you to be their permanent partner in enhancing the value of their landscape. They know the value of trees. Whether you want to make sure all is well with the trees in your yard, you're changing your landscaping, or you're moving, invite the certified arborist at the Care of Trees to take a look. See thecareoftrees.com or call 84, and, you know, they're working on getting the zip code finder fixed.
Mm-hmm.
Thecareoftrees.com or 847-394-4220. 847-394-4220. The Care of Trees. Their business is people and their love for trees. All right. We've got some comments here on Facebook. Now, Greg Alexander has already weighed in. He says poinsettia. Greg, you're off my Christmas card list. Patty Kraft in Ohio says, poinsettia, she's on the list. Maureen McDonald, I say poinsettia. Love you, Maureen. Here's a Kathleen Thompson writes, she says, and, in her little snarky way, and, how do you pronounce acacia, fuchsia, artemisia, status, and impatience? All the letters? Well, she's right, because it would be acacia.
Mm-hmm. Artemisia.
Fuchsia. Artemisia. Staticky in
Statis. Statis.
And impatience. Impatience. She's got a point.
Mm-hmm. Well, and then Greg comes back with, keep in mind, the English language has loose rules at best. Beer, bear, and bear. B-E-A-R, B-A-R-E, B-E-E-R. He's got a point there, too.
That's right. So what was the one we were going to go with? The
Ponzetters.
Ponzetters.
That is now Zamboni approved. She likes Ponzetters.
Ponzetters, the new official pronunciation on the Mike Novak.
Poinsettia and poinsettia.
Ponzetters.
Ponzetter.
Hey, Ponzetters. Hey, every week I talk about how WRD Environmental has led the way as a green business in Chicago. Now, I personally witnessed how they do this a couple of weeks ago at Mayor Daley's 2010 Landscape Award Ceremony. You might remember we had the Joy Garden at Northside Prep, had those folks on the show last week. And the Landscape Award Ceremony recognizes how people from all walks of life in every neighborhood of this great metropolis work to beautify their worlds by creating and maintaining plots of land, whether they feature flowers, trees, edible crops, or all of the above. It is inspiring to see how individuals and communities alike work to create a better Chicago by putting seeds and plants in the ground and faithfully caring for them. And it's not surprising that each year, WRD Environmental is an official sponsor of this vital and empowering program. Since they were formed in 1997, WRD's mission has been to create sustainable landscapes. They have always used locally grown native plants when possible in their design and build projects, used recycled, energy-efficient supplies, and sought nature's balance. Simply put, being green is part of their DNA. For experienced sustainable landscape development, trust the professionals at WRD Environmental. You can find them on the web at WRDEnvironmental.com. Anything else? Nothing? Any more comments?
Oh, yeah, it's just loading.
I keep getting...
Kathleen approves. She loves Ponzetters.
Ponzetters.
Ponzetters it is.
Ponzetters. I keep getting...
Text messages?
Facebook text messages here, all right? and that was the last one. With my new...
Ponzetters. I like Ponzetters, too.
Ponzetters. Okay. Here are some words of advice from Bobex. It's always darkest just before the dawn, and deer are hungriest just before the spring. Now, what does that have to do with us now? It simply means that constant vigilance is one of your best defenses against deer, rabbits, and other critters that are foraging for food in the fall and winter. Applying Bobex on a regular basis teaches them to look elsewhere for their meals, especially in late winter when food is harder to find. And the point was, I talked to Greg Exidy at Bobex the other week, actually, and he said, you know, it's something if you do it all year, the critters get used to not wanting to eat there. And that's a good thing, if you're trying to grow plants, that is. Now, in the spring and summer, you might be applying Bobex every week or every other week. In the fall and winter, spray every 4 to 8 weeks, depending on the severity of problem. Bobex is also an anti-desiccant, which means that it prevents moisture lost from your evergreens, like rhododendrons and boxwoods, which you should be hydrating right now. However, always read and follow label directions. Bobex is available only at local independent garden centers like Sandy's Back Porch Garden Center in Belleville, Illinois, Platt Hill Nursery in Carpentersville, Illinois, Gomez Greens in Chicago, Illinois. Remember, plants thrive and survive with Bobex. Now, when you hear this next piece of audio, as the beautiful woman who does the announcing here speaks, think Ponzetters.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Think Ponzetters.
And an explosion of red.
Right.
Cantini Gardens wants you to get into the holiday spirit with wall-to-wall poinsettias. Cantini Gardens in Wheaton presents its Shades of Crimson poinsettia display at the Cantini Greenhouse on Tuesday, November 30th from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. An eye-popping 4,000 poinsettias will be sure to catch your attention at this annual open house. Cantini Horticultural staff members will be on hand to discuss the plants and answer questions. Admission is free, and Shades of Crimson will include self-guided tours of the greenhouse and light refreshments. For more information, go to cantini.org. That's CANTIGNY.org.
Welcome back to the Mike Novak Show. I guess we should also get our next guest online, and that'll be Tom Spaulding. But meanwhile, let me go to line one, and I do believe we have a visit from Amtrak Tim. How you doing, Tim?
I'm doing really good, Mike. Really good.
Are you going to take me to the cleaners here, too?
No. I thought I just would add some radio excellence to the continuing poinsettia conversation.
I know. We have gone into the depths here, haven't we? So please, lift us up. Give us some class.
What I'd like to do is we have this whole TSA controversy that's going on right now, right?
Yeah.
So I think Amtrak should come out with a brand new kind of slogan and advertising to attract more people to take it.
Okay.
And the idea being is ride Amtrak. We won't touch your weenie.
I thought you were going to add class to the show.
Well, you know, I wanted to add something to radio excellence that's been continuing.
But there's a point, actually, there. Riding Amtrak is a good thing. It's environmentally sound, and they don't have... Not yet.
What they have for security is a lot more environmentally friendly. Instead of building all these great big machines and using all this electricity... What Amtrak does...
Which goes straight into your body, of course.
Of course. They use the good old-fashioned canine friend to find our people who want to hurt us, and it costs less money, and most European countries do the same thing, so it's a lot more effective.
You know what I've heard, and I don't know if it's true, since we were talking about salvia before, and then we got on, you know, the hallucinogenic.
Really has leapfrogged this morning, hasn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, I know. So the hallucinogenic properties of salvia, and then making juniper berries into gin.
I'm going to sort of digress from there.
Well, it can, you know, we're at the bottom. We can't go any farther down. But,
well, I could help you if you'd like.
No. We don't need any help.
No, you
just
already
me.
You just did, Tim. You're lucky I didn't hang up on you, pal. Okay. All right.
It is true.
Because we're going to have a sublime conversation in just a second. But let me just say that I've heard from certain sources, friends of mine, who say that the dogs now are trained to sniff for explosives, so it's not so much drugs anymore. So that, you know,
you won't get through on your C4, but if you had, you know,
salvia,
if you had herbal refreshments hidden on your person, the dog wouldn't sniff you out.
The thing is, I don't really care about the person, the herbal refreshments. I'm more concerned about the person who's got the C4.
Right.
Well, and that's the point. That's also part of a point. Maybe if we stop putting all this money into busting people and locking them up for 10 years because they had a joint and started paying attention that really counts, which is taking care of the American people, then we wouldn't have these problems.
And I just can't believe it. It's got to be more cost effective to use the animals, because a lot of these European countries, the ones that are less well off than we are, they go with the dogs because it's a more cost effective solution. And it's green, by the way.
There you go. As long as you use organic dog food. All right, I'm going to let you go, okay? Thanks for calling.
Right,
hey, happy Thanksgiving, Tim.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Take advantage of the Thanksgiving break to take inventory at the greenery at Grand Street Gardens just east of Western Avenue at Levitt in Chicago, and kill a bunch of holiday decoration birds with one stone. That's metaphorically speaking. And if you do like birds, they have bird feeders and food to attract them as part of your holiday decoration. But back to the greenery. Balsam and Fraser, wreaths, garlands, and tree stands, and poinsettias, and pine cones, too. Grand Street Gardens is located at 2200 West Grand. They're open Monday through Friday, 10 a.m. to 7 p.m., weekdays 10 a.m. to 6 p.m., and they're located on Grand Avenue, 2200 West. In Chicago, do we have Foghorn there?
Yes, sir.
Let's roll this baby.
South Polowinny is the place for me. Duda, duda, I'll drink my fill of sassafras tea. Oh, duda day. Magnolias. I must be south of the good old Mason-Dixie line. Well, here goes. Out of the deep freeze and into the deep south.
Okay. All right. There we go. I'm not sure why that's the intro, but that's your intro, Tom Spalding, Executive Director, Angelic Organics Learning Center. How are you this morning?
I'm doing great. How are you, Mike?
I'm fine. The show's gotten a little out of control, but you will bring us back, won't you?
I don't know. I was just catching the tail end of that. I was like, wow, this is quite the lead-in to our conversation.
I know. And Tom is also the director of the Illinois Local Food Farms and Jobs Council. And I haven't talked about the group in a long time. A year ago, when it was just, you know, making the transition from the task force to the council, I talked a lot about it on the show. I had Debbie Hillman on. I had other people on to talk about that. And you've been doing your work now for, what, about 8 months or so?
I'm one of 35 directors. I want to be clear about that. There's 35 directors on the board of this council, and I started off as one of the first co-chairs. And we were seated in March by the governor, kicked off the council in March of this year.
Did he actually hold the chair for you as you sat down?
That would have been nice.
Nah, no, let's not make the governor do that. But the idea, and if I've put the information on my website about this, and the quote that always gets me, because it comes right out of the executive summary of the report, Local Food Farms and Jobs, Growing the Illinois Economy. The executive summary starts with this quote, Illinois consumers spend $48 billion annually on food. Nearly all of this money leaves the state. And that is mind-boggling. And that's part of what you're out to change on the council, correct?
Yeah, I think that's right. And I think we're seeing that there's an enormous opportunity in the state to generate not only good food for the people that live in the state, but also jobs and build a local food economy that's really circulating wealth within the state. We're a bit in the agricultural economy. We're a little bit, we talk a lot about monocultures in organic farming and wanting to move to more diverse farming systems. But when you look at the farm economy in the state, it's been pretty focused and pretty successful around the commodity agriculture end of things. But I think we've neglected the opportunities that are there in building a local food economy here. And there's tremendous demand from the consumer side right now, from the eaters in the state who really want to see more available fresh produce for health reasons, for ecological reasons, for economic reasons, wanting to connect with local farmers. And I think there's a tremendous opportunity here that the state wants to move towards, I think. There's been, citizens have been talking about this for years and years and years. And, 20 years ago when our CSA farm, Angelic Organics, was just getting started, it was one of a few in the whole country that was taking form, this kind of eaters getting together with farmers and saying let's produce locally. And now we're one of probably 4,000 CSAs in the country, serving more than a million families in the country.
That must be pretty satisfying.
These things are growing.
Yeah,
it's no longer the kind of those the image of the organic hippie kind of hanging out on the farm. These are real going enterprises all across the country, and it's mainstream now. Our slogan off from the back of our T-shirts in 1993 was "Know Your Food, Know Your Farmer," and that's the USDA slogan now. This is all the way to Washington now. They're promoting in the federal government. Food economies around the country, and this is in Illinois. The council was really kind of riding on that wave. It's the citizen movement coming together and working now with the state government, seeing this as something that's important. And so the council was really created as this kind of bringing together of state agencies, together with lots of different actors in the local food sector, from the farmers through the nonprofits that are active in the urban areas, or food retailers and others along the value chain of the food system, coming together around the council to help facilitate, bring the players together, get them out of their silos, a good farm metaphor, get them out of their silos, get them working together, and see if we can move forward a local food economy.
You gave me a lot of great websites, all of which I posted on my website, mikenovak.net,
great.
And you can go to this week's show, and you have the study that Iowa State University did about the economic impact of fruit and vegetable production in the upper Midwest. You've got Collaborative Regional Alliance for Farmer Training. There's a couple of websites. You've got Farm Beginnings. You've got the Prairie Crossing Farm Business Development Center. You've got the Michael Fields Agricultural Institute. The question I have, because somebody asked me this the other day, and I wasn't sure I knew how to answer it, and I mean, you talked about monocultures and commodity growing. People think, the people who aren't well-versed on this yet, and more people are becoming well-versed, they think, well, a farmer's a farmer. You grow food. But not necessarily. As you say, when we want to put food on the table, we got to go off and out of state because the stuff that's grown in Illinois is, as you say, commodity farming,
right,
which is not
right.
Really about feeding people. It's about other things. How do we bring – and then the question is raised, well, you're not going to get some guy down the block who's got a community garden to be able to feed the world the way our country has fed the world for the last 40 years. How do we bring the two together?
Well, I don't think we have yet in Illinois getting into kind of throwing rocks at each other from the conventional, the commodity market, commodity farmers against the local food farmers. I think there's definitely room in the state for both to coexist and in some ways create opportunities for some of the struggling commodity farmers to get into the local food sector, because farming You know, there's 1 in 100 people now farming in this country. It's such a small part of the population that's engaged in agriculture. We don't want to lose the wisdom of the commodity farmers that are out there. Many of them, if they had opportunities in other places, would move towards those, because in most farmers are struggling, whether you're in the conventional sector or in this local food sector. It is not easy to make it in farming. It's stacked against you. I mean, most commodity farmers these days are surviving because there are subsidies in place to keep them in business from year to year. There's a few spikes in corn prices will go up for a short period of time, and it looks good for a year or two, but very quickly, the way the economy is set up, farmers lose those premiums pretty quickly because all the input prices go right up behind it and take away that profit. So it's a tough thing to stay in, and I think we shouldn't get into kind of let's fight among ourselves. I think we should be helping each other to figure out how to build a robust local food economy that gives opportunities to the farmers who are already farming, whether it's commodity farming or not, and the others in the local food economy that are trying to make room for more in that area. Because there's plenty of demand in the local food economy. There's not enough farmers growing locally. And that Iowa State study, I think, really documents it well, that there's a tremendous opportunity here. And it's not a trade-off between the commodity farmers and the local food economy. You can produce, in that Iowa Foods, that Iowa State study, it showed that if you picked out the 28 most demanded fruits and vegetables in the upper Midwest in 6 states, and you produced them locally, you'd need 1 Iowa county of farmland to produce all those 28 for half the year for the whole 6 states.
Isn't that amazing? Yeah, I remember.
It's amazing. You don't need the kind of vast farmland that you need to produce corn and soybeans. I mean, our farm, you know, on 25 acres of organic vegetables, we feed probably 5,000 people a week. It's very productive, and when you get down into, you were talking about small gardeners. I mean, when you look at the amount of productivity in a small, biointensive urban farm setting, those are usually, you know, can be 15 to 30 times more productive per acre
than a
conventional farm. So there's room for everybody to get involved here, and there's tremendous opportunity. When you look at that Iowa study.
Hey, Tom, I'm out of time.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's okay. But you're on a roll, you know, and I appreciate it. And you're going to be back on the show, back on our Good Growing segment. And again, all the information. That's Tom Spaulding, Executive Director for Angelic Organics Learning Center and Director of the Illinois Local Food Farms and Jobs Council. Thanks so much. You're going to be back. We got to continue this conversation.
Great. Thanks, Mike, for making space for it.
No problem. Take care now.
Big help.
Bye-bye. Take care. Have you made your holiday to-do list yet? Thanksgiving is this Thursday, and gift shopping and holiday parties are not far behind. Sid's Greenhouses and Garden Center can help you get through these hectic times with great gifts plus home and party decor. Now, we talked about poinsettias. Everybody's been disappointed by grocery store poinsettias. So this year, send a real florist-quality poinsettia from Sid's Greenhouses. I'm just sticking with it. They deliver throughout the entire Chicagoland area, and in addition to poinsettias, they have gift baskets custom made to order. Get your list of family, friends, business associates together. Call Sid's tomorrow, and it's done. Sid's can also help with home party decorating, fresh Thanksgiving and Christmas centerpieces. Add a special touch to the table. They've got it all. So get over to Sid's, Chicagoland's premier garden centers, located in Palos Hills on Southwest Highway, and in Bolingbrook on Napier Plainfield Road at Hassert Boulevard. We're just about out of here. I'm looking at a couple of things. The ridiculous thing, Zamboni writes, is that everyone actually hates this plant, and the unpronounceability is part of it. There you go. Chicago Tree MD said, did I miss the lighting segment? Yeah! All right. But he just had his trees illuminated. Aspen's awesome. Okay, listen, next week, Friday, Frozen Robins, my caroling group at Chicago Botanic Garden, 10 a.m. to noon. Come by and say hi. They're going to be on the program next week.
And then Saturday you're at the winter, with the trains, the winter.
That was Friday. 10 a.m. That's what I just said. Okay. And they're on the show next week. Go green or go home.